Welcome everybody to another episode of the Going In Raw podcast with myself, Ryan Walker. This episode, I have been joined by Gail Elmsley-Daniels. She is the global career manager for Ted Baker. Gail has been in the industry for a number of years. She's built herself up from scratch, really, from, as she mentions in the podcast, working in the warehouse ourselves, doing the picking and packing, building herself up into working for one of the biggest, if not the biggest, fashion company in the world. She's just now been named in the top 100 most influential players within logistics in 2019, which is a fantastic accomplishment. In this episode, we go through a number of different subjects. We talk about how e-commerce is now becoming a major part of the industry now and how that's affecting the bricks and mortar retail industry. We talk about how Ted Baker do things, probably I wouldn't say different to the smaller companies and how much they similar that they are, just on a bigger scale. Now, Gail has mentioned that she's passionate about team building. She knows how to build a great team run about her and training involved in doing so. She goes into detail about doing that as well. It's a great chat we had. We talk about a lot of things. Mentors is another one. We talk about mentorships and how having a mentor in the industry is a great, great thing to do if you want to get to that next step of your career. So guys, have a listen. Hope you enjoy it. Please like, share, subscribe, and comment on it as well. I love your comments. I like listening to your guys' spin on things. So I hope you enjoy it.
Are you looking to up your recruitment and logistics game? Well, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Going In Raw podcast with your host, Ryan Walker.
Hello.
Hello, Gail. How you doing?
Hi, Ryan. Yeah, good, thank you.
Good, good. How you doing today? You okay?
Yeah, very glad that it's a Friday.
no, yeah. It's the end of the week and it's been one of those weeks for us. For you.
Yeah, it's always busy. And I think when you work in logistics, you always go, oh, it's all about peak. But actually, outside of peak, it's all about planning for peak. So it just never really ends, does it?
I know,
big vicious cycle of planning and being busy. So yeah, it's been a very busy week actually.
I know, this is the thing, it's after the Christmas period, you get January, it dies down a little bit, but it doesn't really die down properly, I've seen the past few years. And then it's and then February comes in, and then you're back into getting ready for summer again. It's just like, oh God, it's never ending.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think January's all about sale, and then you're looking at new season, and all the especially in fashion anyway. But and it's all about the planning as well, because you've got that deadline of sort of September, October, where everything has to be completed because you're in your busy period. So I guess it's all about that now at the moment, projects, making sure you've got everything aligned, ready to go before you hit that busy period again. So yeah.
That's a lot of sleepless nights and all that sort of stuff, and dreading Monday mornings to see what emails you've got to open. And it's always crazy.
Oh, do you know what? I don't actually feel like that. Quite sadly, I really, really enjoy what I do. So I don't really dread Monday mornings. And I was talking to a colleague or an old colleague the other day just about, you know, the insane getting phone calls at 10 o'clock on a Friday night and taking conference calls on Boxing Day. And you miss it if it's not there.
Oh, really? In Boxing Day? That's dedication.
Definitely done that before, yeah. Because, you know, business never stops. And especially within retail, trade still continues, so you still need to get stuff into stores and make sure customers' orders are being processed. But yeah, I think genuinely I'd probably miss it if it wasn't there. I think there'll come a point in time when you go, right, actually I need a longer holiday now. It's not a week, it's going to be 3 weeks.
That's it. Yeah, I know, that's it. Put that leave pass into the boss and say you better sign this off, otherwise I'm just letting
yeah
it.
Exactly.
But yeah, thanks again, thanks for jumping on the podcast with us today, Gail. It's I've been obviously talking to you previously, and I'm really excited for you to come on and talk about a few bits and pieces, obviously the industry and obviously what's happening, obviously kind of team building and stuff like that. So I do appreciate that. But first off, I really kind of have to say to you, really, to be fair, is big congratulations, to be honest. Obviously been named, was it the SHD Top 100 Most Influential Players of 2019?
I know, what an accolade that is.
I know, yeah. I have to say, how much did you pay for that one?
I know. Do you know what? It actually came as a real surprise. Usually you sort of network in and maybe your name might get mentioned, but they sort of contacted me and said they had a panel of judges and said that I'd been put onto that list. And, you know, looking down that list, there's some players in the market that I've known for many years and I've got great admiration for. And I think that was my first sort of response when I put it onto my social media, just about the people that I'm sat on that list with. It's really quite nice to be considered and just, yeah, be thought of in the same category, I suppose.
But recognising, I was looking through the list myself and I was seeing some big names in there myself, to be honest, and I was like, right, how do I get these guys on there? You know, but so if I not to say that you're not the important one, of course, Gary, you're the first one for this year, to be honest. Well, yeah, for you, sort of thing. So, well, nice one. But with the top influential players, you mentioned you just got in contact with. Do you think that's just being recognised within the industry of what you've been doing?
Yeah, I mean, I've been around for a while now. I mean, I remember back in the day when I used to sit in meetings with, you know, my mentors and my managers, and they'd sit around a table and go, oh, do you know such and such? And now they're at this company. And I just think, crikey, they know everybody. But now I do that. You know, I meet someone, go, oh, how are you? And, oh, you've moved companies 3 or 4 times. And I think just as you get more experienced and keep yourself relevant in the industry, and that's what it's about, keeping yourself relevant, keeping yourself up to date. Not necessarily going to every networking event, but making sure you're keeping in contact with all of those key players. It keeps you relevant. So, yeah, and I, you know, I'm really lucky. I've worked for some really big name brands. So people come knocking on my door quite regularly because they want to talk to the business and therefore I'm part of that business. So, yeah, it's kind of swings and roundabouts. But
that's great. I mean, I obviously want to talk to you about, obviously, your current position at the minute. You're currently the global carrier manager for Ted Baker.
Mm-hmm.
Huge international company that is, especially in the retail. I mean, it's I can't lie, I've got a few Ted Baker shirts in my wardrobe. They're doing that, and I'm sure numerous people listen to their products in their wardrobes or they're wearing them right now, sort of thing. I mean, with working with Ted Baker, it's such a huge company out there. Is that the influence you must have there, and obviously the kind of scope you guys have got with obviously your position, do you think that's something different than working in a big company than it would be to say like a kind of smaller medium-sized company? Do you think that working there has got any sort of different sort of thing, or is it the same kind of processes or the same sort of kind of the stuff you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, Ted Baker, I mean, what a brand. I mean, the clothes speak for themselves. Every time I see somebody in the industry, I can't tell you how many times somebody's flashed me the inside of their jacket and gone, oh, I'm wearing Ted Baker. You know, it's one of those brands where it's at the price point where we can just about afford it, but it's at the smart end. You know, you go into
a
nice business meeting and you want to wear your Ted Baker suit. So it's a great brand, and I feel very privileged to be able to work as part of the team there. And as part of that company. But I think even regardless of the name, I do get a lot of people knocking on the door, but you have to really think about the profile. So back in the day, so what, 10 years ago, I was at an old fashioned mail order business in Swindon, and it was doing okay. I mean, it's not necessarily relevant in this day and age, you know, the magazines through the door, but they were doing sort of 1 million+ parcels in domestic UK market. The brand wasn't particularly well thought of. Not a lot of people understood it. The average customer age was sort of 60s. So it was more affluent as well. And Ted Baker's a bit more modern, and people like the clothes and they wear it for business meetings and weddings, and they like the perfume, and it speaks much more to people these days. But when you sit down and look at the profile of orders, we're not as heavy in the market as say Scots was. So Scots did sort of 1 million orders in the UK. And Ted Baker does 1 million. It's about 1.4 million globally in e-commerce anyway. Wow. So we'll ignore retail. And that's because our average order value is much higher. So our volumes aren't as big in that arena. And e-commerce, I guess, has been much more of a growth market for us in the last 5 or 6 years, because we were quite a business focused on retail and wholesale historically anyway. You know, we partner with the likes of Debenhams and John Lewis and House of Fraser. And I think as those markets are dwindling, we're focusing much more on our e-commerce. And it's a big growth market. So I guess coming back to your point, do you do things differently? You still have to look at what profile and volume you're working with. You know, I may work at a fashion retailer, but ultimately I move boxes for a living and I make sure cartons get to customers and they get the service they want.
Of course.
And then that's all about volumes. So we can negotiate as Ted Baker, but ultimately you've got to negotiate on the volumes that you've got and what works with different suppliers. You know, there are small to medium carriers out there that, you know, we work really, really well with. The bigger carriers, not so much, because they want all the high volume trailer fill that they'd get from the fast fashion industry that are pumping out, you know, our weekly volumes in an hour. So it plays a part in it. You know, people want to speak to Ted Baker, but you have to consider all the other variables as well.
Of course, yeah. You mentioned, you just touched on there, the e-commerce and retail side of things. I mean, this is a big, big thing, the difference between the two, and what's obviously the e-commerce side of things is starting to really come massive, massively popular with the internet and obviously all that sort of stuff. You must have seen the shift in the past few years. Do you think that's going to carry on going the way it's going with e-commerce, like starting to dominate more retail? Because I mean, you've seen previously with different kind of high street chains going down. I mean, and the thing they said, Christmas just gone, they predicted that the high street will be less profit, but it's actually turned out to be more profitable than the year before. I mean, what's your take on that? Do you think e-commerce is starting to kind of take over now?
Yeah, and I think the press really do like to make a bit of a meal out of all of the doom and gloom. And when it's not always doom and gloom, it's just about looking at different profits and how they squeeze their margins. And I think the retail industry as a whole just needs to be a bit more agile and a bit quicker to find alternative ways of doing business. So e-commerce, absolutely. We all like the convenience. It's how I shop. I rarely go out and carry bags around town. I do it occasionally, but so we all order online, and I think we will do that more, but I still think there's an absolute requirement for the retail and
the bricks and mortar sort of thing.
Absolutely. And as much as a marketing tool for Ted Baker, you know, every single one of our stores is unique to that area. Whereas some stores are more streamlined and they do the same sort of format in every store, like Superdry, who I used to work for before as well, and that works for them. But in order to keep things going, you need to keep being agile. And the likes of House of Fraser and Debenhams are just, I suppose, at the moment, just figuring out how their businesses are going to look moving forward, because they're not going to go away. It's just going to look very different. And I think it's just about flexing to what the consumers want. Yes, I mean, in short, e-commerce is the way it's going. So all businesses need to focus on that. And us at Ted Baker are definitely putting a lot more energy into our projects around e-commerce for the next 12, 24, actually probably for the next 5 years. It's the biggest area of focus for us, because it hasn't been for so long. We've been focused.
It's all about planning ahead. I mean, the things with companies, obviously the consumers, and obviously a lot of people don't realise that you're looking about 5 years in front. You're looking at predicting a lot of what the trends are happening. And people don't understand it. They think it's just like, oh yeah, you're just doing it like week by week or month by month, but it's not like that at all. Because I would imagine that, obviously speaking to previous people in all the industry that similar to yourselves, big companies and stuff, and they're talking to me about, oh yeah, in the next 5 years we're getting involved with X, Y, and Z and we're doing all this. And it's just like, wow, you forget that you have to plan so much ahead. And it's a bit of a gamble really, because sometimes you don't know what's going to happen in 5 years, but you have to do your best. And I think it's so difficult to do.
Yeah, and and that's what we're trying to do at the moment, is look at an omni-channel approach to our business and what that's going to look like over the period of time. So one of our big focuses this year, and you know, this isn't limited, there's many things going on, but we're looking at a ship from store model.
Right.
And I guess the view is it's actually going to create more sales. You're going to be able to utilize different stock pools. But what we're really doing is setting ourselves up for the future so that we're much more agile when it comes to servicing our customers, when we can do same day. It's not part of the initial project. We're just going to be servicing it in terms of managing those orders from a different stock pool and try and manage our stock a little bit better, but it doesn't necessarily going to create incremental sales. But in the future, when we can look at those same day delivery options, you know, like the likes of Argos and Sainsbury's do really well, that'll be open to us because we've thought ahead, we're planning for now and what we can adapt that to in the future. So we're using those storefronts as a bit of a hub and spoke model as well.
To use them sort of thing. A mini hub for yourselves. So you're basically, if that's the case, because I know you mentioned before you're in different department stores, that's basically in every major town within the country sort of thing. So it kind of opens up a whole network really of distribution for you.
Yeah, correct. I mean, it's not straightforward and stores necessarily aren't set up to service e-commerce orders in the same way that our distribution centre will be. So we need to think outside the box about how we can do that and keep the customer experience the same, because I don't know if you've ever ordered from us online, but it's a very unique experience. You know, it's boxed, it's tissue papered, it come, you know, you're not spending a tenner for a t-shirt, you're buying a jacket for a wedding and maybe even your own wedding. So you want it to come in a certain way, and we pride ourselves in that experience. So translating that to the back of store is not going to be easy, but I think just thinking about how the evolution of retail, e-commerce and all of that omni-channel experience is going to progress over the next 5 years, we need to make sure that we're ready for it and we can support
that. And that's completely agree. I think that's just the main thing, is getting ready for it, which is, I think this year is going to be huge for companies nowadays. It's what I say this year, because I think that's going to be the make or break for a lot of them, to be fair, because things are changing, but changing very fast. If people don't really kind of step up and really kind of execute on their plans, they're just going to be left behind, to be honest, you know. And it's the big players like your Amazons and all that sort of stuff are just going to take over. Like, they're doing world domination so far, so they might as well keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, all kudos to Amazon. Everybody talks about them in some way, shape or form, but they are really the drivers of consumer behaviour and what people's expectations are. So whether we like it, loathe it, or we've got to lump it, because most people have ordered from them at some point. They're used to that experience now, and then you have to try and translate that into other businesses which aren't, you know, pumping out the volumes that they are, and with the infrastructure that they've got to support that as well. So
I know, I seen that. I was actually reading a news article during the week, and it was actually the testing out robots. Have you seen that? They're testing out robots in Milton Keynes to drive the last mile.
And always got something robotic.
And I was looking at, and you see it. You see this little kind of, that little buggy just drive along the road. And I'm like, that's the weirdest thing. If I was walking down the street and I seen this coming towards me, I'd brick it. I'm like, bloody hell, what's going on here?
But they're They're the epitome of thinking forward. Like, for us, that just seems bonkers. But in 10 years, will it seem that bonkers? You know, I feel old every day right now, but everything changes so quickly, and the way that we shop and the way that people behave, and, you know, drones, it still seems a little bit out there, but it's happening to a small extent. So why wouldn't it suddenly be, you know, where we all need to be?
Of course, without a doubt. So the future is now and the future is here. Yeah. So it's going to be scary. Skynet, Terminator 2, it's all going to happen. Conspiracy theories are all going to kick in. And Amazon's going to be at the start of it.
Probably. Yeah, they start everything off.
Taking the world over. So obviously you've been working for, Ted Baker. You've been working there for a number of years beforehand. You're working a retail background as well. Now, obviously, to work for these big companies, I wanted to kind of touch on, the building a team around about you. Because you've mentioned before, we had a chat beforehand, you think building a team around about you is essential to what you get, what you do. Now, this has been kind of brought up numerous times in the past few years about people coming into the industry and finding the good people for companies. Obviously, I'm obviously in a kind of recruitment headhunting background, so it's kind of what we try and do. But from your point of view, you're big into training and bringing people up in the training. When you get people into the industry, what do you look for? What's the main things that you'd look for someone coming into the industry, looking to get part of into the kind of distribution or supply chain logistics side of things? What's the sort of things you look for?
Yeah, the thing you can't pay for is enthusiasm. And the minute you meet people, they've either got that or they haven't. And you can't fake it. You're either passionate about coming to work or you're not. And everybody's reasons for going to work are different. You know, there are some people that just want to come in and do their day job, but they want to do a day job really, really well. And then there's the other people that are driven. They want it all. They want to know how to get there. So you have to think about how you can support people in different ways, because those driven beings are usually the hardest ones to manage, because, you know, anybody who's got that drive tends to think a little bit ahead of where they are. So you need to make sure that you're managing people's expectations, coaching them along the way, you know, and things that pop up. So, I mean, when I joined Ted Baker, they never had a career manager until I joined, which, you know, was quite a surprise to me. But it was also really, really exciting, because you get the chance to build something from nothing upwards. And I've been there just about 2 years. But when I left Superdry, the logistics department was much more sophisticated, shall we say. It moved on quite a lot from kind of where Ted Baker are currently at, I suppose. And the team I had there were looking after retail, e-commerce, and managing all the KPIs and service levels. And I think the resounding thing is, when you've got a team of people, you have to look at everybody's strengths in isolation. Like I said, you've got the people that want your job. And I like those people. But you can't have a whole team of people that all want your job, because that's not
going to be like civil war in there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, if anybody said, you know, if they said, "Oh, this is what I want from my career, I want to do what you do," and I think, you know, going back to how I fell into this, because I did, I fell into logistics and carriage. I sort of left school and I grafted and I did many, many different jobs, you know, warehousing, and then I went into customer services, which always sets you up well for, you know, your future. And then I got really good at just knowing and understanding logistics and carriage. And I was at Scots of Stow, and I feel quite fortunate that I had a really good couple of mentors along the way and some really good managers who've sort of seen my desire to succeed, I suppose. And there was one point in time they said, "Oh, we could make a career manager role." And I had a team of people. And because I was really enthusiastic about what I was doing, and getting good at what I was doing and enjoying what I was doing, you know, I think that spreads. And as long as you've got that passion, and if you lose that, then you're not really going to be good at managing people. You need to be really enthusiastic about what you do, because then other people get excited about it. So, and that's just carried on with me. And I'm really pleased that my career's progressed how it has, because, you know, back in the day when you were a really small company, and you've not really lived outside the town that you live in, you don't realize how far one career can take you. But
definitely, without a doubt.
But it does. And I've seen, and you know, my success now is also seeing the success of the people that I've brought along that journey as well, and where they've ended up today, and when they've got promoted, and what they've achieved. So that's also something key for me, you know, the tick box to say what's made me successful at seeing those people as well. And staying within the industry as well, because it's not the most glamorous, you know.
It's not.
Boxes and we're at the butt end. Nobody, especially in fashion, you know, it's a designer brand, and it's exciting, and you've got the marketing and models walking around our office and famous people. And then I move boxes. And if that box doesn't get there on time, you know, nobody really cares about all the stuff that got there well. They care about what didn't go well. So you have to be really passionate about it, and getting other people within the industry who are passionate about it as well is quite exciting.
Do you get that sort of like kind of misconception sort of thing, because you obviously work for the Ted Baker brand? You think that everyone thinks it's going to be it's glamorous and it's going to be all this sort of thing. Do you get that? Then it's like kind of when people actually come into the business, they're like, "Oh, it's not like this at all." And it's like, "Well, what do you think it was going to be? You're working logistics. You're not working in like the main office." Do you get that?
I don't think so. I think, you know, most people that I work with or work within logistics are pretty familiar with the differences in, you know, from fashion and doing the designing and the marketing piece. So I've not really come across that a lot, but I guess the industry we work in is fairly glamorous. We do have sort of famous people walking around the office, and it is more flamboyant, I guess, than some other businesses. So there is still a really exciting edge about working in the industry that I work in, without a doubt, even though we do move boxes for a living. But it's just
it's just a different, it, you know,
Yeah, we get to go to warehouses and see big machines move boxes around rather than going to fashion shows, per se. So,
what would you rather do, though? That's the thing. What would you rather do, Gail? Come on.
Quite. I know. I just, my fashion sense just isn't ready for that sort of. I can walk around in some steel toe cap boots all day long. That's fine.
That's it. Get the high vis on and all that. You'll be fine. That's the main thing. That's the great thing. Yeah. But I mean, you mentioned
this. But you know, this day and age. Sorry, that was.
No, I can't.
Got to say, this day and age. People are going to university and they're getting supply chain degrees and logistics and carrier degrees. You know, the Cranfield University is a perfect example of that. So back in my day, it wasn't necessarily something you did. It was more sort of apprenticeship based. But now people are actively seeking that out as a career path, which is great. You know, it's a great career. It's done me well, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, yeah, of course. Yeah, I was just literally about to just actually mention the same thing, really, to be fair. Obviously, with people coming into the industry, there is a hell of a lot more opportunities out there for people to come in from a university standpoint, from the graduates to come through. I mean, you're quite different. You actually kind of started really from your way up, really, wasn't it? It's quite a different sort of aspect. Yeah. You kind of went from that. Do you feel that way is a better way of doing it? Or would you feel as if coming through to a university way is doing it? What, I mean, I know you're a bit kind of biased on that, but you've seen...
Well, yeah, I'll give you two answers. So I'll give you my mother, older head.
Cool.
No, you go to university and you do it right.
What's up, guys? We've got some knowledge coming here. Everyone write this down.
Yeah, that's right. And you give yourself as much opportunity as possible. Yeah. You know, I've got a brother who's really close in age and he did it that way and he got his degree. Right. And it's always been that comparison. But, you know, if you ask him... He said it's not necessarily the shining light. It's all about the drive and ambition. And so do I, actually. You know, I've worked, whatever job I've done, I've always tried to do it to the 100%, the best of my ability, no matter what it was.
Yeah.
When I was picking in a freezer, you know, minus 30 or whatever, when I was sort of 20 years old, I always wanted to pick the most. Yeah, but do you know what? It gives you a different way of achieving your goals. But, you know, if my son asks, definitely go to university.
Of course, that's it.
So I think there's definite value in both, an education and the stuff you get from learning all of the skills that you get within university is absolutely valid. So I think if I could do it again, I probably would. But also look at where I've got to and what I've managed to achieve in my life, and that's just through pure drive
and determination.
Everything I've got, I've done for myself. So. You know, I value both ways, to be fair.
I mean, the thing is now as well, there's actually more options available now instead of just university being your only option. There's actually other places like courses you can go. And now companies actually adopting academies. I mean, UNICEF have got a huge one like that as well. There's a lot of different companies out there who are adopting academies to come in and train people up to do similar sort of qualifications. And if they don't want to, say, like they haven't managed to get themselves into the university they want, but they really want a good career, and they've actually kind of built that through, which is it's opening up the industry to a wider net sort of thing, and just instead of just being specific, and I think that's going through things like that. I mean, is that, do you think that's something that maybe I don't know, maybe like a Ted Baker might open up to, or the kind of concentrating on, or is it just the keeping into the university side of things, or the main apprenticeship thing?
Yeah, no, Ted Baker do. They do sort of have our interns, if you like,
all right.
and they bring people in. But again, I think with Ted, the logistics part isn't the part that people want to come and look at, per se. They want to come and learn all the designer functions and how a business operates. And that's fine. And that works with a different set of people. But Supergroup actually did pair up with their local college and brought people in for each department. So I do remember quite a few people coming into logistics and they loved it. So yeah, you're right, there are other avenues as well. It doesn't have to be, you know, education right up until the point where you get a degree. You can do it sort of at college level, and but it's how you draw people in, I suppose, as well. Fashion's quite an easy way to get people to come into businesses, and brands speak quite highly to that sort of generation, don't they?
Yeah.
Where it's all about the brands. So it's easier to do that, I would say.
Do you think that's been a bit of a bit easier to bring people into, obviously, like Ted Baker, because of the name? Do you think that is, because obviously people will be listening, you're obviously talking about getting people in, and it's not as easy as it all obviously seems. Do you think you've got like a bit of an added edge on everyone because of the name that you've got?
Yeah, I think I would say so. I mean, most brands these days have. They've all got something quirky about them, any successful brand anyway. They've got that edge, and people are always intrigued by that, aren't they? And want to know and understand more about how those businesses work. And it's a definite eye-opener. When you're at that sort of college age, you know, late teens, early 20s, you don't really understand business fully. And you see these brands, and when you understand what it takes to make, ship it in, how it all gets in and out, and how you store it and the packing. Yeah, it's a massive eye-opener. I've seen some really shocked faces over my time, and people I've employed, I've taken them to sort of carrier hubs, and I don't think in your mind you don't realize what it takes for a carrier to pick up a parcel and then deliver it. It seems like a man put in a van and gives it to you in your hand, but that bit in between where it's going around mechanized hub facilities and getting sorted and pushed down chutes is fascinating.
Oh, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's always that again. That makes me I love that bit about my job, when you're bringing people into it and they're learning that part. I mean, I've seen too many hubs now; it's ridiculous. But it's nice to still see people learning those things afresh as well.
Oh, of course, yeah. When you talk about the hubs and stuff, that I've been on, I've been obviously witnessing all that sort of stuff back in my, well, I was in the industry myself, sort of thing. And it's just crazy. It's like organized chaos. You look down, you're like, what the hell? And it's actually like, you can speak to obviously the manager there, sort of thing, what is actually going on here. And you can basically down to the specific detail, we can tell you what's happening with every part of it. And it's just like, from someone looking outside into it, you're like, what? How can you know this? It is like organized chaos, but the process works, and it's really quite impressive to witness, to be fair.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. And especially how it's come on probably over the last 10 years. The UK, we are so sophisticated in the way that we manage parcels. I mean, it's much easier because we're a little island. It's easier to get things maneuvered around. But when you go to Europe and then see where we're placed in relation to some of those hubs as well, it's fascinating.
Brilliant. I mean, you mentioned previous earlier on about mentors. Now, I'm a obviously learning all of people, and it just basically kind of, I was going to say like quite crude way of putting it, but sucking all the knowledge out of them, sort of thing, to kind of make you. But was that something you looked at earlier on in your career as well?
Yeah, I've been part of a couple of mentor schemes. So I'm joined the Women in Logistics group, and they heavily promote their mentor scheme. So they set people up and try and get people talking at different. So you'll go and you'll say, look, I'm at this level and I need to speak to somebody possibly a little bit more senior than me about how I progress in my career. Or I myself will put myself forward and mentor people who are trying to work their way up as well. But I think you get those organic mentor relationships as well, which you just nurture over time, and it has to come. You know, I think I've been in businesses where they go, right, we're going to put you with this person to mentor, but I don't think that necessarily works as an approach. You have to find people that you work with really well,
relate
to,
can
bounce ideas off. Yeah, and they'll give you critique where you need it and shoot you down when you don't.
And
they're not
upset you, sort of thing, if you've done something that's not really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, it's not even necessarily about seniority level now. I do 360 degrees with my team. I ask them for feedback, whether I like it or not. But, you know, that's good development for junior staff, actually. And that's one thing I'd always recommend.
Do you not get a bit nervous when you kind of talk to them about it? Go, right, now you can criticise me. Do you not sit there and like, please be gentle, sort of thing?
No. And what I say is, actually, it's really good development for you, because it's not easy to give feedback to your manager, constructive or otherwise. It's not so, and if it's put in a way where, you know, I think they can learn something from it, not necessarily because I disagree, but it is about them learning, so you know, you can both work on that.
That's so understandable. Yeah, it's really getting over your own perceptions, really, and your own kind of insecurities. I think that's the big main thing if you're doing something like that. Because a lot of people like that. They go, I don't want to do that, because they know deep down they're like, I don't want to hear the truth. But sometimes to develop yourself and build on your own obviously kind of experiences in your own career, you need to bite the bullet sometimes, and you're very right that you need to be very open with it. That's definitely the way forward.
Yeah, I agree. And 360 reviews are really good. But in terms of mentors now, I don't necessarily have a senior mentor, but I have a lot of peers that I rely on.
Okay.
Old colleagues, and we chat, and you need that support as well. Just that business relationships that you can have, and not necessarily always about friendships as well, just where you talk about work and they can give you advice. And I've got quite a lot of that as well.
Ah, that's great. That's obviously kind of, I mean, it's always good to have people, you know, in the industry. They can obviously offer advice every now and again. And all that sort of thing, which is fantastic. You mentioned about Women Logistics, and I've came across the Women Logistics group before. It's starting to really kind of get a really good large recognition now over the UK, and I've seen it on LinkedIn, and you see all the events that they organise. It's really starting to become quite impressive, the sort of like a reputation you guys have got. How did you manage to get yourself into that?
Oh, crikey. I think it was about, I think they got together maybe 7-8 years ago. It might be a little bit longer, but it really gathered momentum. And I think the whole women movement, especially in the last couple of years, means that people want to be part of it. But they do have a lot of men involved. It's just the title now. It looks a bit female elitist, but there's lots of men that attend and speak. And it's just about people within the industry coming together and empowering each other is ultimately it. And making women feel, because it is a tricky industry. And, you know, historically, in some of the, you know, the older logistics businesses, especially freight forwarding, and you know, I don't want to single any industry out, I'll probably get shot down for that. But there's a lot of male figures.
Yes.
And it's been that way for a very long time. So it's not easy for women to feel comfortable in their own skin in order to speak up, because, you know, there's differences in approach. And I guess that just comes with confidence. So I guess the Women Logistics team, and they do a great job, is just about empowering women to feel like they've got a voice and feel like they can speak up.
That's great.
And not necessarily power to all women, you know, it's not necessarily that way. But it's a
feminist
really good
group. Like, good as a girl, you kind of sitting there giving it like, we hate everyone, we want to be better, not like that.
Yeah, but do you know what? The amount of times I've been approached and asked to speak at events and said, oh, you know, we need a female because we've got too many men. And I mean, I'm hoping that they still want to hear from me, but ultimately there is a bit of a disparity between how many men there are and how many females there are in the industry. I don't tend to think about it that often because it doesn't bother me. I'm going to get to where I need to get to regardless of my gender, but it is a factor within logistics. So
you mentioned before, like, certain parts of the logistics with freight forward, especially the transport world as well, you get a lot of that.
And now I'm
starting to see a lot of, obviously when we get into that sort of field and up for the challenge, and it is a sort of like, as I say, we mentioned before, that it's not a glamorous industry, but sometimes it can be a little bit of an out-of-date backwards industry as well, keeping up with the times and keeping up with like different technologies. It takes a little bit longer for us to kind of really get back into it. But with the stuff like this, these sort of like kind of women logistics and obviously different mentor programs that are starting to be created, I think we're on the right path now, to the right direction, hopefully. We'll see that next year. We'll see how we go on.
Yeah. No, I definitely think so. And I do get invited. I know loads of women within our industry now. It is definitely getting a bit more on the glamorous side, shall we say. It's not all about men in suits, although they all wear Ted Baker suits, so that works fine for me.
I think if they didn't wear Ted Baker suit, I think you'd have to like kind of be questioning that, really, wouldn't you? But what are you doing?
Yeah.
Do you get that if nobody wears like Ted Baker in the office or a night out, you actually question it? You
say, no, why yeah, no, we all, but
here?
If we ever go to
Ted Baker office.
Yeah, if we ever go to events, we always wear Ted Baker. I mean, why wouldn't we? It's a great brand. I mean, I'm not just saying that because I'm there. It's a really, you know, the clothing's fantastic. And I do feel very fortunate to work for Ted
that's
sense. I know, just selling it a little there, but that, you know, genuinely, I think everybody loves a bit of Ted Baker clothes. So
we do. As I say, I've got some of my wardrobe, so I can't really say anything. I'm a, I'm a bit of a, kind of, I love the shots and I love all that sort of stuff, so I can't not.
Yeah,
that.
I've got a conference in 2 weeks and I guarantee I'll be able to spot the Ted Baker suits a mile off. But yeah.
Is it? Can you actually see it? Is it that bad? Because you've been working there for so long, can you actually see them straight off? That's quite impressive, really, to be
No, fair. Do you know what? Well, it's the lining, isn't it? We've got that really fancy lining on most of our clothing.
Oh, yeah.
And on handbags, you can see it inside, yeah.
Straight off the bat.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. So, I mean, we've been chatting for a good, well, close to 40 minutes now, obviously, and I want to obviously kind of wrap things up now, sort of thing, with you, Gail. But obviously, to finish off, we've talked about business, we've talked about what you've been up to and what the on a work side of things. Obviously, from yourself, what do you do, sort of thing, to wind down? What does Gail like to do on a night when she finishes? Ted Baker's off the distance. What's the sort of things you like to do in your spare time?
Do you know what? I love my family. And I think as I've got a little bit older, I'm acting like I'm ancient, but I'm 40 this year, so it's really hitting home.
You're not ancient at all. Come on.
Oh, well, it feels like it. But, you know, I love my partner and my son, and we just do things together. You know, we like going on holiday a lot, probably more than I should, to be fair. But it's just about living life, isn't it? You know, we like to go camping and bodyboarding, and I'm so glad I'm looking out the window and the sun's starting to come out and I've started to see the flowers come out. So I know it'll be time to pack up the camping gear again soon and go down, because I think that's where I find my most zen, is sitting in a field where there's no Wi-Fi and we've just got food burning on the barbecue and, it, you know.
God, and it is, it's just going, about going old school style there. I love that.
It is. And do you know what? I love it. I love that absolute peace and quiet.
It is.
And it is just about finding that work-life balance, enjoying what you've got when you're at home and enjoying your work while you're there, because I love that too. So
yeah, it is important. I completely agree. A lot of people don't understand it. A lot of people don't do it, and they just kind of work themselves to the bone, but they need to have that escape sort of thing. You know, everyone's got their own little quirks that they like to do, and I think obviously embracing that makes yourself a lot better. But as you say, mind work-life balance is extremely important nowadays.
And, oh, absolutely.
To do stuff like that is, you have to be done. So it's, that's great. So we'll see you on the out camping in the next few months then, I would imagine, kind of living off the land and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, no phone or iPad to be seen.
God, that's going to be, I don't know if I could handle that. I couldn't handle that. I'm too much of a techno.
Yeah, you've got to though. Yeah, you got it. My son doesn't like it very much, but there you go.
No Fortnite or anything like that, either, bless him.
No, yeah.
All right. Well, Gail, it's been an absolute pleasure for you, obviously, having you. I know you're a very busy woman. You've got, obviously, things to do. It's a Friday morning, so I think it's probably a busy time for you at the minute, sort of thing. But as I say, it's been an absolute pleasure having you come on here. It's been great to talk to you. And hopefully we can, obviously, get this out there, and hopefully we might be able to do a follow-up maybe the next couple of next year. We might even be the top 100 influential players of 2020. You never know.
Crikey, yeah, 2020. How time flies.
Has anyone actually done it 2 years in a row?
I think so. I think there's some people that go on it year after year. So I don't know what I need to do. I need to get in contact with the people, ask them if they like wine.
Yeah.
How are you? Do you like Ted
Baker?
Wine?
We've got a lot here.
yeah, we'll see.
No problem.
Well, good talk to you as well. Thank you.
No problems, Gail. Take care. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks, mate.